Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Great business lessons from a great hero. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. Today is July 31st. This is Bill Quinn. It's the last day of the month. I'm so sad. Are you sad?
I'm sad that summer is coming quickly to an end.
Are you sad, Lois?
Well, I never liked the heat in July, so I'm not too sad. Here in Taipei, the heat can be pretty brutal.
Well, but I'm speaking of Advance Magazine. I'm always sad to see a month come to the end, but good news. August is just around the corner.
Exactly.
So we got
another month.
We got another month coming right up.
Right.
So, but we haven't finished July. We're going to finish July today with the third day of our speed review. Winston Churchill, CEO, and Stephen Shaw and Lois Fisk are back joining me to wrap up this article about this great leader I mentioned at the top of the program, great business ideas from a great leader. And Winston Churchill was a great leader, particularly for the United Kingdom during World War II, leading that country in a very difficult time, rallying the citizens and the troops to defeat Hitler's Nazi Germany. But he had a great career all the way throughout, right, Stephen?
He really had a full and distinguished life. So more than just a war, he was an adventurer. He was a journalist. He was one who was never caught doing nothing. He would, even though he was out of office, out of favor, he would still be very productive.
Yeah, he didn't just lay around and watch TV. So all throughout his career, he was looking for something to do. So he kept busy. He would try to be on the front lines of expansion, England's expansion around the globe, managing the colonies, but also fighting wars. He would try to be on the front line everywhere. So, Lois, you told me that you've posed with a statue of Winston Churchill. Is that right?
Well, I've been to there's three statues in Canada that I know of, in Halifax, in Ottawa, and in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I hear they've really cleaned up the area where they have the statue in Toronto. So I'm going back there in the summer, so I would like to have my picture beside it.
Oh, you're going to get your picture
taken.
Yeah,
but I have been there.
Churchill.
I have been there. And I'm encouraged, Bill, that that more and more young students in Canada are learning about Winston Churchill, learning about the Bulldog.
Okay. I was going to say that was his nickname, right? The Bulldog.
That was his nickname.
The British Bulldog.
The British Bulldog. He
Why?
Never gave up. He was stubborn, never gave up.
Okay. Tenacious like a bulldog. Never give up. So that's a great nickname. Very appropriate for Winston Churchill. So he had just a fascinating history as far as starting early in his career, which I did not know as much about, that it started so early, literally 50 years before World War II almost. And he built up to this. So as far as, starting as a young soldier and then a war correspondent and then traveling the globe. It was amazing how much traveling he did.
Well, apparently he was into music and arts as well, that he was quite accomplished in both art, either sketching or painting, and also in with music.
Well, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature late in his life in the 1950s, but actually he began writing not only as a war correspondent, but he wrote books in his 20s. That's when he started writing books. He actually wrote several accounts of the Boer War, the Second Boer War that he fought in, and some history books and other war books at that time. So he started early writing books.
His life makes you look like, ooh, can I even accomplish half of that?
In addition to traveling around the globe.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, you're close to that age. You're in your early 20s. How many books have you written?
I've written a few blog entries on the internet.
A couple blog entries. When's the book coming out?
Oh, I'd be Nyota happy if I was able to just mimic Winston Churchill's life in even the slightest sense, Bill.
Okay. All right. Well, let me think about that. I'll see if I can think of any, like, hot spot in the globe to send you off to go fight a battle then.
Well, thank you, Bill.
We'll do that. But listeners, fortunately, you don't have to do that. All you have to do is turn to page 44 in your Advanced Studio Classroom magazine and learn about Winston Churchill. We're on day 3. It is July 31st. Let's have our first reading for today, Deep Personal and Moral Values.
Deep Personal and Moral Values. Throughout Winston Churchill, CEO, Axelrod turns very specific historical moments into broad strokes of genius that can be widely applied. For example, in the chapter that espouses the importance of drawing a line and holding your ground, he points out that Churchill once said, "We would rather see London laid in ruins and ashes than that it should be tamely and abjectly enslaved." Axelrod translates Churchill's underlying messages about the importance of values and principles into usable terms for all organizations and leaders. To add impact to Churchill's point about drawing a line, Axelrod conjures the words of Ralph Waldo Emerson to show when defining a core identity is more important than flexibility.
I love the title of this section, Deep Personal and Moral Values. Up until this point in this article, we have been talking about history, a little bit of history, Churchill's background, going through a young man up through World War II. This section has to deal with some of the ideas and the principles. That's another key word from this. I don't see it in here. Oh, there is principles there down about line 13. That is a key word from this section. So deep personal and moral values and principles. And we're picking up here about throughout Winston Churchill, CEO Alan Axelrod, the author. What does he do, Stephen?
Well, in his book, Axelrod turns very specific historical moments, and we've seen all those moments in the past 2 days. And he turns these into broad strokes of genius that can be applied widely. When we say broad strokes of genius, we mean almost patterns or trends that you know, really illuminate a life lesson, that really present an example that we could live by. So these are broad strokes of genius that Axelrod is showing us.
Okay, so when somebody gets an idea, we might say, oh, that's a stroke of genius. In this case, we're adding the word broad to just maybe expand it into an idea, a way of living, right?
Yes.
Way of operating. So not just a single idea.
It is one that you can apply your entire life.
Okay. And this is stuff that can be applied particularly in business too because the focus is on leadership. So we have an example there in line 6, beginning with the sentence in line 6, Lois.
Right. It says, for example, in the chapter that espouses the importance of drawing a line and holding your ground, he points out that Churchill once said, "We would rather see London laid in ruins and ashes than that it should be tamely and abjectly enslaved."
Okay. Now, first, let's tackle the first half of that before the quote. That sentence, the first half
right.
of that. So, espouses, Lois.
Yeah, we have the word. A spouse is a root word. It's a verb and to support an activity or opinion.
Okay. And then drawing a line, holding your ground. Those two, Stephen.
Two very rich terms. Drawing a line, when you draw a line, you're dividing two areas dividing an area into two halves. And it means showing, you know, where's the limit. So you can say drawing a line in terms of behavior or drawing a line in terms of rules.
Sometimes you might say, I will tolerate up to this limit, or
exactly.
I will only put up with so much, and then I have to draw the line.
Yeah.
Sometimes parents have to do that with children, right?
That's
I'm going to draw the line on this.
And sometimes those children cross the line, and that's when those children are scolded at.
Uh-oh, yeah, bad news.
Sometimes you do that when you're buying a car. I'm drawing the line here. I am not going to go above this price. And you make
right.
it known to the guy salesman who's selling you the car.
Okay, it's a mental thing. It's not like you're actually doing this with a pencil or something on paper. It's just it's like a mental decision.
Absolutely.
Okay. So you draw a line and then you do what?
You hold your ground. This is a term we hear in the military where you cover a certain area, you have to hold that. You have to protect it from the enemy encroaching or trespassing your territory. You really have to hold your fort.
You give up you hold on to your position. Mm-hmm. You don't give it up.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, some people use that for their beliefs, whether they be religious beliefs or something like that. They might say, I'm holding my ground on this.
Right. So he can draw a line and hold the ground. Axelrod points out that Churchill once said that we would rather see London laid in ruins and ashes than it should be tamely and abjectly enslaved. What does he mean?
He says, basically, we're going to fight. We're not going to surrender because this is what's going to happen to us if we surrender.
Right.
We're going to be somebody's puppet. We're going to be slaves.
Laid in ruins and ashes. Well, literally, that's what did happen during the Battle of Britain and the siege of London because so many buildings were destroyed.
Yeah. Not near as many, though, as if, you know, if they had made just a half effort. They really did make a full effort.
And of course, during this time, the citizens – one, of course, they'd have to turn out all their lights at night. But not only that, they would have to go down into the tube, into the subway.
That's right.
Right? To avoid being killed by the bombs. And some of them still were killed.
Right. And it was a very, in particular, a famous story out of that time, Bill, is that Queen Elizabeth II, who was Princess Elizabeth then, and her sister, Princess Margaret, they would not be sent away. The family wanted to send them to Canada.
Yeah.
They would not be there. They believed they had to be there for their people.
Right.
And they got busy helping and assisting in the city and returning soldiers that were injured.
Sure. Well, your leaders need to be there. What would the citizens think? Well, the leaders have left here. They don't want to deal with this.
But they were pretty young at the time, but they didn't want to move out.
Yeah. Okay. And that it should be tamely and abjectly enslaved.
Why, thank you, Earl Grey. Well, here, tamely describes the English under the occupation. They would be tame. They would be nothing. They wouldn't fight. They wouldn't argue. And abjectly, it was an adverb form of abject, which is extreme. And you can just imagine the conquerors, the Germans, you know, abjectly enslaving the English, really punishing them.
Well, and it was proven. That's what they did do when they conquered countries. Abject, we also might say abject poverty to represent extreme poverty. We continue with the next paragraph, and Axelrod translates, or we might say interprets, Churchill's underlying messages. Right, Lois?
Right. That's right. We might use that word instead, and we want to make it clear. And Churchill's underlying message about the importance of values and principles. Yeah, and we're looking at this at an organizational level.
Into usable terms. So not just an abstract term that doesn't mean anything, but he wants to turn it into something usable for companies and leaders that they can employ on a daily basis. So we can all see this in our workplace. It actually makes a big difference in a workplace if you do have good, strong leadership or if you have weak leadership. So much like a country, companies can have good leadership or bad leadership.
That's right.
If there's bad leadership, it's not a good place to work. So now, to add impact to Churchill's point about drawing a line, what does Axelrod do?
Axelrod conjures the words of an American philosopher, writer, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and shows that sometimes defining a core identity is more important than flexibility. All right, let's backtrack and break this thing down. To conjure something is to think something up, to make a picture, an idea in your head. You can say, oh, who conjured up that idea?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here what Emerson is saying is sometimes it's better to have a core identity rather than to be flexible. You could see throughout Churchill's life that he was in favor and out of favor many times, but one thing didn't change, and that was his core identity. He stuck to his principles. He stuck to who he was. And as a result of that, you know, he showed bold leadership and is someone that a lot of people could look to as a stable figure, not always feeling the political winds.
His principles were more important than being popular.
Yes.
Very important to remember that. And unfortunately, today you see a lot of people who are more worried about being popular rather than sticking to principles.
Well, he really appeared to us to have moral values. You don't see that a lot today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we did have our first edition of Literary Library yesterday. I just love this show. And we pick up another edition of this great program that investigates fabulous books.
Welcome back to Literary Library. I'm your host, Chive Dressing. We're discussing the new best-selling book, Winston Churchill, CEO. Joining us again is historian Sir Earl Grey.
Oh, delightful to be here in the library with you, Chive. Must say, your suit is smashing.
Well, thank you, Lord Grey.
Ah, please, call me Earl. No need to be so bloody formal, Chive.
Yes, but of course, Earl, we left off yesterday with Winston Churchill's escape during the Second Boer War and his hero's welcome back in England.
Churchill was just in his early 20s when he started to lay the groundwork for his career. After this, he was elected to Parliament and served in the British government and army during World War I.
But strangely, he lost his seat in Parliament in 1922, and he no longer was in the cabinet.
Such is the fickle way of politics, Chive. Heroes are celebrated and then ousted, depending on the flow of public opinion. But this difficult time only served to strengthen the man.
His services were no longer desired by a victorious British citizenry. That is until World War II.
Here we see, Chive, the tides of war wash ashore the beaten and the brave. Churchill wisely predicted trouble from the Nazis, and after Neville Chamberlain's failure, Britain needed a strong hand to rally them.
It was in the midst of these harrowing times that Churchill espoused the saying, "Victory, victory at all costs." This was a message that his terrified countrymen needed to hear, yes?
Oh, yes! And his message as Prime Minister during World War II is one that should be studied by all leaders, Chive. History conjures an image of a man willing to die rather than be defeated and enslaved.
But he still had some ups and downs even after this greatest victory of all victories.
Remarkably, he lost his re-election after the war. Such is politics. But ever the stalwart soldier, Churchill became Prime Minister again in 1951, and even won a Nobel Prize in Literature in 1953. Again, victorious.
And we will end with that victory. Thank you, Sir Earl Grey, for joining us here on Literary Library. Listeners, we hope you too can be victorious. This is Chive Dressing saying good day.
I try to join in on a literary library whenever I can. I love that program.
Oh, it is a wonderful forum.
Yeah.
I know. I want to join in someday.
Well, okay. We'll see what we can do. So whenever you're studying books, tune into Literary Library, but also tune into Advanced Studio Classroom Magazine for articles like this, our speed review about Winston Churchill, CEO. And let's wrap things up with our final reading for this article.
Axelrod then infuses this lesson with an in-depth examination of Churchill's life and the decisions he made during his long tenure as a leader to add sturdy weight to the argument for instilling deep personal and moral values into leadership. As a renowned historian and business author, Axelrod transforms the life and words of Churchill into a story that offers leadership lessons which are as timely today as they were when Churchill put them into action, while successfully leading his country through its most harrowing times.
Okay, we are talking about how Alan Axelrod takes some of these important messages from Winston Churchill's career, and then he turns them into valuable lessons that can be used in not only organizations, but all types of situations that you might be involved in. The important thing, remembering deep personal moral values and principles, having principles, not worrying about being popular, being liked, but having those principles, that's the key. So we left off there with our earlier reading on line 18. With those ideas, we pick up in line 20, and the author, Alan Axelrod, then does what?
Axelrod then infuses this lesson about leadership with an in-depth examination of Churchill's life. When we say the word infuse, we think of the word inside that fuse, which is, you know, putting two things together. And so in a way, Axelrod is putting these two things together, the lesson about leadership and deep personal values, and also the story and example of Churchill's life.
Okay. And throughout Churchill's life, then we see the decisions he made during his long tenure.
Tenure, right. And we have an explanation for it in specialized terms here. Tenure, the period of time when someone holds a job, especially an official position. We'll often hear it for a professor.
Right, because professors try to get tenure.
That's right.
What does that mean?
Well, they want to hold on to their job.
Okay.
They want a permit. They don't want to be an associate professor.
Okay.
They want a tenure, a guarantee, almost like a contract.
Right. So there's some guarantee with that if a professor does get tenure.
That's right.
There's security in that.
And it's a real big deal usually for the professor and for the university, hopefully.
Yeah. Okay. So in this case, we're talking about long tenure, Churchill's long service in military and government. So his tenure as leader to add sturdy weight. We're talking about what Axelrod is doing. He's infusing these lessons, and they add sturdy weight. Now, what does that mean, Stephen?
That's right. When you say you add weight to an argument, you do that. You give it more meat. You make it a more forceful, compelling argument.
Okay.
So by infusing these lessons with Churchill's life, he is really strengthening his argument about, you know, why it's important to have deep personal moral values.
Right. Sturdy being a synonym, for instance, like with strong, we might say that building is sturdy or even the person is sturdy. It's a very strong person. So a synonym for strong. And we had used infuses at the beginning of this paragraph, and then I see instilling, Lois.
Right. We have the sturdy weight to the argument for instilling deep personal and moral values into leadership. Basically, that reminds me of instilling. You're learning something. You're remembering something. You're going to take something from this.
Okay. They're kind of synonyms, infuses and instilling. It means to put something into. And actually, that's what that prefix would mean, the IN, to put something into, right?
Correct, Bill.
Okay, so both of those words can be used when we talk about putting something in, usually ideas.
Oftentimes we will hear, I want to instill my values into my children.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So in other words, you want to reinforce them, probably repeat them, probably teach while you're along the road of life with your children.
Okay. And as a renowned historian and business author, renowned, Stephen?
Renowned means famous, well-known. So Axelrod, as we learned 2 days ago, he's authored many books, and so he is a renowned historian and author.
Okay. He transforms the life and words of Churchill. He gives them life into a story that offers leadership lessons for business people of all levels, of all levels. It doesn't have to be the corporate executive, the CEO. This is for you, me and you also, and anybody, that we can also take these lessons like the personal and moral values and the principles. And they are just as timely today, right?
They are just as timely today. And, you know, doing this article, I really would actually like to read the book. And I would actually like to learn more about Winston Churchill just to apply it to my own life.
And Churchill put these ideas, the principles, the moral values into action, and while successfully leading his country through what, Stephen?
Oh, through its most harrowing times. Mm. Now, when we say the word harrowing, we mean extremely difficult, extremely upsetting. I usually think scary. Mm. This was Britain in its last throes. It was the only free country in Europe. And to me, living at that time, it would have been a harrowing time.
Yeah, harrowing times often makes me think you don't know what's going to happen next. You might not even know what's going to happen in the next 30 seconds. So this is what Winston Churchill really was. He could not give his people, or we have to realize he was also leading the Allies. He could not give them any sure thing that was going to be positive about this.
Right. They didn't know. That's a key thing, Lois. They did not know if they would win. This was a dangerous time.
Exactly.
And if they lost the war, it just would have been terrible. So for decades, it would have been terrible.
We would be teaching.
Yeah. We'd be teaching German instead of English.
Right. Let's talk in German.
So,
that's right.
This was a harrowing time because they did not know. Now history has shown what happened, but at that time the people didn't know, so it was very scary. The other thing that really sticks with me is not only the principles and deep personal moral values, but what I really like from Churchill's early life is his adventures, some ways. He never shied away. And he was always going out there, and he was living life to its fullest. He wanted to be on the front lines.
Right.
I don't recommend that people go into war and battle, but he's a great example. Go out and do it.
Right. Even as a man who was, you know, in his senior citizen's years, and later he was still traveling. My home country of Canada, he went to 9 times between the years 1900 and 1954.
Okay. Stephen, final thought.
That's right. You were mentioning his early experiences on the front lines, and I think that did help him later on as a wartime leader, just understanding what the soldiers on the front lines did. But I think Winston Churchill is an incredible figure. I think, listeners, you need to take away the lesson that leaders define reality. And if you have a leader who has deep personal moral values and the conviction of Churchill, you know, you would be in good stead.
Okay. And also, the other lesson I like from his career is that he didn't win all the time. Won, loss, win, lose, so, but he kept fighting. So go out, be adventuresome, and keep fighting. Don't just let the defeat make you quit. Listeners, thanks for joining us here for this article and the month of July. We'll see you next month for August. Till then, this is Bill.
Lois.
And Stephen.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.